We've just been joined by a vision of loveliness. It's Fleur, and I can't read the writing on the board, so it's Fleur from the Isle of Wight Domestic Abuse. Is it a society or is it?
It's a forum.
A forum,
yeah.
Right? Okay. So obviously, what it is you are looking after people that are suffering from or will be in issues, problems. Serious problem, in some cases. So how much of a problem do we have on the island?
With relation to domestic abuse and for sexual violence as well, I'd say the problem down here is pretty much in line with the rest of the UK. It's certainly no greater, but I think it would be a mistake to think that because we live on this beautiful island, we don't have any issues, because we certainly do. The rate is roughly 1 in 4 for domestic abuse in a person's lifetime, and 1 in 5 for sexual violence. And we have no reason really to believe that it's any different on the Isle of Wight to what it is on the mainland.
That's quite high, isn't it?
It is, actually. It's shocking. I'm used to those figures because I say them a lot, but it is really shocking when you think about it. You've got, you know, half a dozen people in a room, a significant number will have experienced domestic abuse or sexual assault.
Crikey. And we're just having a look at the Isle of Wight and comparing it to everyone else. We all know, I mean, that we're quite an old island, no disrespect, Shirley, but we're quite an old island. So is it a young person's problem, issue, or is it pretty much across the board?
Well, I think what we've found from the British Crime Survey, which is a national survey, is that those who are at greatest risk of domestic violence or of sexual assault are young people aged 16 to 25. That is, sadly, the growing market for this kind of offence. But that's not to say it doesn't affect anybody. Unfortunately, it doesn't discriminate, so it does cover anyone of any age. And of course, it also affects people who are in gay relationships as well as those in straight relationships.
So, I mean, how far do you go then? When you've got a problem like this, is it a case of, right, the first thing first is, you know, somebody's safety? Or do we then go back in and say, right, okay, this man is an abuser. Does he then get help for his problem? Because it is a problem, isn't it?
Absolutely. No, I think it's both, actually. It's very important that we've got a kind of a holistic look at the issue. Always safety is first. So if we're confronted with a situation where somebody's suffering violence or abuse, our priority is always to get them to a place of safety, to make sure they're safe. But secondary to that, when we're doing the longer-term ongoing work, then absolutely it's to make sure that we have, any perpetrators are able to access support to change. Otherwise, what happens is you rescue, if you like, one person, and the problem will simply move on again when that perpetrator gets into a new relationship.
So that you do actually tackle the other side of things as well. How does that go? How does that work generally with people? Are they like, you know, after a period of time, look, thanks for sorting me out, I was a bit of an idiot, or do they just sort of put the wall up and say, I don't need any help?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I mean, there is a community perpetrator program on the island run by the Hampton Trust called ADAPT, and that's a program that's voluntary for perpetrators who recognise that there's an issue and that they want to do something about it. It's actually quite rare for perpetrators to recognise they've got an issue. Obviously, if they're in the criminal arena, then the courts can order that somebody goes on a domestic violence awareness programme. But yeah, it really depends on a person's motivation as to how successful that's going to be. If somebody goes into it thinking, I don't have a problem, then they're really not going to change.
So what are the issues? I mean, we can all assume, we can all guess, and we can all be judgmental. I mean, you're saying, you know, the issues are mainly from a certain age, but they go across the board. So one would sort of think that, you know, just on the outside looking in, it would be maybe drink issues, maybe, you know, financial difficulties. What are the main problems out there?
I think those sorts of things definitely contribute. I mean, certainly the current financial climate that people find themselves in, you know, families getting into debt, redundancies, adds a load of strain onto a relationship, which if it's already difficult, isn't going to be helpful. But I think it would be wrong to think that if somebody suddenly found a job or had their drinking problem sorted out, that they wouldn't still have a tendency to be abusive. You know, there are plenty of people who do find themselves in financial difficulty or who drink who don't choose to abuse their partners. So I think we're always quite clear that it is a choice to behave in that way, and it's something we can choose not to do, and obviously there's help and support to do that.
Now, I'm going to ask a question. You're probably going to shock me, but is it mainly women that are at that are under threat?
It is mainly women. Yes, I'm sure that's not shocking to you. The statistics show us that it's one in four women, and around one in seven men. But of course, it could be that men are more reluctant to report than women are. It's a difficult area for anyone to report, and arguably men would find that more difficult. But I think it's important to say there are male victims, and all of our services on the island work with both men and women equally.
Is it more difficult to deal with a man that's being abused, or do you just look at it exactly the same way?
It's not exactly the same. I think what we've found kind of through research nationally is that women tend to be a victim of that kind of coercive and controlling behaviour that's part of a pattern. So it's not likely to be a one-off. It will go on over time. And they're also more likely to suffer more severe physical injury, understandably. That's not to say the experience isn't any worse for men. It's just different, and it requires a slightly different approach. But it tends to be more of the one-off, and it tends to be more emotional abuse.
Do you know, I would have thought that it would be, looking at domestic abuse, I would have thought that it would have been an older person's, after a certain age, purely and simply because what's been highlighted out of certain events of the last few months are that it was all right to grope somebody's bottom in 1966. And, years and years and years ago, it was all right for a bloke to say, look, I'm wearing the trousers, you're not. And there would have been an element of bullying. But times have changed. So you would have thought that those people that would have had the problem to, to adapt to today's society, that's where the issue would. But, you're saying that it's a younger person's issue, it's a younger person's problem.
It's definitely growing as a younger person's problem. I mean, the statistics show us that they are the most at risk, and I think that there's lots of reasons for that. But I think young people, this isn't all young people. I don't want to sound like I'm saying
all young people are
violent and abusive, because it's absolutely not the case. But I think attitudes have changed, and what's considered acceptable to young people is perhaps different to the tolerance levels I would have. So a lot of young people wouldn't identify that groping that you refer to as a sexual assault. It is a sexual assault to be groped by somebody. People have different expectations of relationships. There's lots of theories as to why that might be. Obviously, people look at the internet, the accessibility of internet porn, for example, and that eroding of healthy, respectful relationships, really. What it is to treat somebody with respect seems to have changed from certainly when I was younger. That's not to say that was the good old days, of course.
Sure, absolutely. It's obviously it's an interesting thing, and it's kind of opened my eyes just to see, because I would have thought there would have been, okay, it'd have been tagged in that sort of area, people's lives, that age group, but it is slightly different. So, I've opened my eyes, so hopefully, fingers crossed, there'll be people out there listening and thinking, well, this is kind of new to me as well. Those people that are listening out there that may have issues but kept silent, what do you advise them to do?
I would obviously advise them to come forward and talk to somebody, and I'd want to make it really clear that all of the support services on the island would treat any inquiry with the utmost confidence. I know it can be hard sometimes when you live in a small place that's quite rural, everybody knows each other, to come forward and ask for help, because you feel that people might find out what's going on. It's very private, but your inquiry will be treated in the utmost confidence. If you don't want to talk to the police, you absolutely don't have to. If you just want to receive support or advice, that can happen without any referral to the police. Obviously, if you do want to go to the police, they'll take it very seriously indeed.
This is going to sound like a really daft question, but when does it become abuse? I have a vision of someone giving a clump or slap or something, but when does it, because it's not generally physical abuse, there can be, mental abuse as well. So when does it become abuse? Is there a fine line?
I think, we all know people who have arguments at home. We wouldn't want to call, everyone that's having a bit of an argument and say that they're in an abusive relationship. That's not the case. I think the government tried to make this clearer last year when they changed the definition of domestic abuse to include coercive control within the definition. And that really is the key thing, that even where there's no actual physical violence, one person is exerting control and coercion over another so that person is fearful and has no option but to fall in line with what that perpetrator is saying or doing. It's not just calling somebody names. It's calling somebody names over a prolonged period of time so that it erodes a person's self-esteem, their confidence. Typically, it's cutting off a victim from their sources of support, their friends and family. It's affecting every aspect of themselves, really, and making it really hard sometimes to identify that that is actually what's going on, confusing them, making them feel it's their fault. Typically, victims often blame themselves. If only they'd kept the house tidier, if only they hadn't looked at that other guy. It's never the victim's fault. It's the fault of the person that chooses to treat them in that way.
I tell you what, it's an interesting thing, and I just wish that sometimes we were a bit more open about everything. And the reason why I say that is because earlier this year or late last year, there was a campaign for the NSPCC, and it was very powerful, and it was very to the point, but it explained. And it almost explained where the line was, and it was something along the lines of that you cannot be, you know, the underpants area, the underwear area is a no-no. If somebody, yeah. and it's almost like, right, okay, that draws attention to what is right, what is wrong, mm-hmm. and it's like another thing that we do is, if we were to ask a lot of people on the street today, when would you dial 999? It would probably be a cloudy issue. So the reason why I ask is, when does it become, you know, abuse? Is there something that we can simplify so that the people listening to this and, you know, in the future can say, hang on a minute, that is abuse, rather than having to, I would imagine the majority of people out there that are kind of, is it abuse or is it not? They're the ones that are probably going to stay silent because they're not sure.
Yeah. I'd say that there's two strands to it, really. With regards to domestic abuse, then I would say, if you're not sure, talk to somebody, because you're not going to be criticised for ringing up saying, this is happening. I don't really know if that's abuse or not, but this is the sort of things I'm experiencing. That's fine. I mean, that's what people are there for. If you're worried about it or you're wondering about it, the chances are it's not right. It is one of those things where, if you're in a relationship, you know when you're in a safe, comfortable relationship that you feel is a trusting one. If something's niggling at you, if you're not feeling comfortable, it's not that the police are going to come racing in if you ring somebody up and say, I'm just not sure about what's going on in my relationship. That's what these services are there for. They're there to give support and advice. With regards to the NSPCC campaign, I thought that was really helpful. And the recent campaign that we've launched on raising awareness of rape is aimed really at making it clear what consent is and what consent isn't. Because that's something that we found from young people in particular, that there's a very kind of shady idea of what it is to consent, so that there are these ideas that if somehow a girl's very drunk, that means yes. Or if somebody's dressed in what might be considered a provocative way, that means yes, they want to have sex.
Sure.
And the idea of getting that campaign out is to make it very clear that if you don't have consent, it doesn't matter what somebody's wearing, it doesn't matter what they're doing, it doesn't matter if they're walking in the wrong part of town late at night, that's not an invitation for somebody to rape them. And I think it is really trying to get that debate out there and get people thinking about those kind of casual assumptions they make about rape victims and how hard in turn then it is for somebody to come forward if they have been raped after a night out with somebody that's perhaps known to them, and whether they'll be taken seriously.
Do you think that I mean, you're just one person that works in a group, and I'm sure you do fantastic work and long may it continue, but do you think that there, you know, we do enough to highlight the fact that you've just said there, it'd be a great slogan, just because I might be dressed a little bit, you know, in a way tonight, it doesn't mean that I want to have sex with you. Do you think that's out there enough? Because let's be honest, that's a simple bog standard way of doing it that is going to be effective.
Absolutely, no, I agree, and I think you're right. It's not that out there enough. There is a sort of a common understanding, if you like, I think, within society that rape is one of those crimes that somehow the victim is partially responsible for it happening, which is not something we'd really think about with any other kind of serious crime like that, that the victim would bear some responsibility for the crime happening. And that's the aim of our posters, which I know might be seen to be challenging for some people and controversial, but they do address that very clearly, I think. If you're dressed like this, if just because you're drinking or because you're in a relationship with somebody doesn't mean to say you've given consent. And it's trying to make that very clear. And it's trying to get people talking about it, because I think rape is something that, that everybody has an opinion on. And often it's an instinctive kind of gut feeling. And you look at the photo, like the one on the poster of the young woman in the vest top, and you might have an initial feeling of, ooh, I'm not sure about that. And this campaign is really to get people thinking, why do I think that?
Yeah.
Why do I think that because she's dressed like that, she's somehow inviting a serious assault against her? And it's to get people talking about it, because, as you say, this sort of thing is very much still swept under the carpet. It's not something that's talked about. And unless we talk about it, it's going to keep happening.
I think you're right. As I say, I think we've only probably just touched the surface this morning. I think we really, you know, if you come back on a regular basis, we can do something. I think it would be really, really good to do, because there's just so many fascinating but sad issues to cover and talk about. And maybe it's a case of when you see people, and I cringe, when you see people like Rihanna, and they're going out, and you know they've got next to nothing on. They've got a top on, and it's completely see-through. And yes, okay, she's going to have bouncers around, and she's protected. But what the sad thing is that there will be people of a certain age that are going to go out and do exactly the same thing, but they're not quite so protected. You know, and as I say, that's a sad situation to put yourself into. And maybe it is a case of, there will be an element of, hey, why shouldn't I wear what I want to wear? But also there should be an element of, hey, look, if you are going to, you know, wear this, sadly, someone may feel that, you know, you are inviting them. You're not. But so, I mean, there's got to be, you've got to go at it from both sides, haven't you? You've got to see the issues both sides. It is an interesting debate. It really is. Will you come back again?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'd love to.
Just before you go, if there's anybody out there that knows of somebody or is, you know, what do they do? How do they get in touch? Who do they get in touch with?
The best thing to do is to look on the website, www.consent/consent. It's on the Isle of Wight Council website, and we've got a list of helpline numbers and services that can support victims on the island and on the mainland.
Okay, that's lovely. I can feel myself making a commercial in my head to highlight these issues. I want to, if I may, share a vision with you. Some people might say, well, you might sort of leave yourself open to ridicule, but I make a joke with my wife every night. The last couple of nights has been really, really hot. So of course she'll be in bed. I'll lock up. I'll come up, and I'll see her, and she's got next to nothing on, and I say, in a joking mode, it's like almost Del Boy, like, you know, I think it's very liberating of you to make the first move, darling. And you know, knowing full well that that's it, it's all a joke, but there are people out there that would look at it, the weak people, because that's what they are, would think, hey, hang on a minute, I'm in here.
Yeah.
And you know, that's not always the case.
Yeah, no, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there, I think.
So maybe it's a case of, you know, a humorous side, but a powerful message as well. I'll work on it. I don't want you coming in and filming my wife in bed. Just give out those details again.
It's on the Isle of Wight Council's website, and if you look at /consent, then you'll find all the help numbers for agencies that can support victims on the island and on the mainland.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for coming in. Hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thank you very much.